A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I'm Corn Poppleberry, and with me, as always, is my brother Herman. Today is Thursday, May the 1st, 2026, and this is a Dorothy News update. The topic, Iran and Israel, developments over the past 24 hours. We have Mom at the news desk again.
For listeners who are new, Dorothy is our mother. She is a donkey. She has a very particular way with the headlines. I want to say this will be informative. It will be. I also want to say it will be cheering. That part I cannot promise.
No, you cannot. Mum, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Corn. And thank you, Herman. I will do my best, although I must say, when I looked at the papers this morning, I did wonder whether my best was really what anyone needed to hear. Sometimes I think the news is a bit like the bread my sister Prudence used to bake. It looked perfectly fine on the outside, a lovely golden crust, but when you cut into it, the middle was raw dough, and the whole thing collapsed into a sad, warm heap. That is a ceasefire, I think. It has a golden crust. It has been 3 weeks now, since the 8th of April, when the United States and Israel and Iran all agreed to stop firing at one another after that dreadful two-month war. And yesterday, late on the 30th of April, a senior Trump administration official formally declared that hostilities have terminated, for war powers resolution purposes. That is what they said. No exchange of fire between new armed forces and Iran since Tuesday, April the 7th. Which sounds so final. And then you cut into it.
Mum, the formal termination is a legal requirement under the war powers resolution. It is not spin, it is a procedural step that actually constrains the executive branch. Congress has to be notified. It is a good governance moment.
I am sure it is, dear. I am sure the paperwork is impeccable. But I cannot help noticing that on the very same day, the Israeli Defense Minister, Israel Katz, was at a ceremony promoting a new Air Force commander. And he said, Israel may resume military action against Iran soon. That was his word. He said Iran had suffered very harsh blows over the past year, but we may soon have to act again to ensure the objectives are achieved. He said the current moment presents historic opportunities to reshape the regional landscape. That is the phrase that worries me, Herman. I remember a documentary about the Peloponnesian War. The Athenians kept talking about historic opportunities. It did not end well for them. It did not end well for anyone, really. The historian said the whole thing was a catastrophe that paved the way for Macedonian dominance. I think about that a lot.
Mum, he said, may resume. That is not a declaration of war. It is a warning shot, a bit of deterrence. It is meant to keep things calm.
Oh, I know, sweetheart. And I am sure the Iranians found it very calming. Because they responded, you see. The new supreme leader, Ayatollah Mojtaba Khamenei, the son of the late Ali Khamenei, who was killed in that Israeli bunker strike in March, he issued a statement. He said Iranians will safeguard nuclear and missile capabilities as a national asset. He accused the United States of causing instability in the Persian Gulf and vowed to expel foreign forces. This is a man whose father was killed in an airstrike, and he is being told by the Israeli Defense Minister that war may resume soon, and he is supposed to think, oh, well, that is just deterrence. I shall be calm. I do not think that is how it works. My sister Prudence had a neighbor whose dog was cornered by a larger dog. The larger dog barked. The smaller dog did not back down. It bit the larger dog on the snout, and then they both needed stitches, and the neighbor had to move. She moved to a flat near the bakery, which is how I know the bread story, actually. The bakery was not very good. The crust was lovely, but the inside was raw.
Mum, you are comparing a geopolitical standoff between nuclear threshold states to a dogfight outside a substandard bakery.
I am, yes. Because the dynamics are not so different when you strip away the sophistication. One side barks. The other side barks back. Everyone insists they are only defending themselves, and then someone gets bitten. And in this case, the bite might involve a nuclear program. The new Supreme Leader is drawing a harder line than some expected. That is what the analysts are saying. He's not just vowing to protect the nuclear program. He is making it a point of national pride, a red line, at the exact moment that the United States is briefing President Trump on potential strike options. CENTCOM finished briefing the President on Iran's strike options. That was reported today. On May the 1st, the day after hostilities were formally terminated. Do you see what I mean about the bread?
I do see what you mean about the bread, Mom, but I also think there is a difference between contingency planning and actual intent. The military always briefs the commander-in-chief on options. That is their job. It does not mean the president is about to order a strike.
No, it does not mean that. But President Trump also gave an interview to Newsmax. He said Iran would use a nuclear weapon if it had one. He praised the military successes of Operation Epic Fury. He said only a guarantee against nuclear development will secure lasting peace. And the Iranians are saying, through their foreign ministry spokesman, Ismail Baghaei, that it is not realistic to expect quick results from talks with the United States. He said, expecting to reach a result in a short time, regardless of who the mediator is, in my opinion, is not very realistic. So, one side says we need a guarantee. The other side says you will not get one quickly. And in the gap between those two positions, the IDF is still shooting down suspicious aerial targets aimed toward Israel. Four of them today. And a 19-year-old Israeli soldier named Liam Ben-Hamo was killed by an explosive drone in southern Lebanon. That is a whole life that was just beginning. His family will not care that hostilities are formally terminated for war powers resolution purposes. They will care that their son is gone. And the IDF dismantled over 40 Hezbollah terror infrastructure sites in southern Lebanon in just 24 hours. That is not a ceasefire. That is a very busy day of military operations.
The Hezbollah operations are in Lebanon, Mum, not Iran. The ceasefire agreement covers hostilities between the United States, Israel, and Iran specifically. Hezbollah is a separate front, and the IDF has been clear that operations against Hezbollah infrastructure are defensive and ongoing. It is not a violation of the Iran ceasefire.
I understand the distinction, dear. But I wonder if the families in southern Lebanon feel the distinction. I wonder if they look up and see the drones and think, well, this is a separate front, so it does not count. The war that began on February the 28th was called Operation Roaring Lion and Operation Epic Fury. Those are the names they gave it. The former Supreme Leader was killed. The Defense Minister of Iran was killed. Several IRGC generals were killed. Iran retaliated by firing some 550 ballistic and cruise missiles and more than 2,200 drones at Gulf nations and you. That is according to the Emirati Defense Ministry. 2,200 drones. Can you imagine the sky? Can you imagine looking up and seeing not birds, not clouds, but a swarm of machines coming to destroy you? And now we have a ceasefire, and the EU says hostilities are terminated, and the Israeli Defense Minister says war may resume soon, and the Supreme Leader vows to protect the nuclear program, and the President is being briefed on strike options, and I am supposed to believe the bread is fully baked. It is not. It is raw in the middle.
It is going to be okay. These are all words. Words are better than missiles. Talking, even talking past each other, is better than shooting.
You are kind to say so, Korn. You have always been kind. It is one of the things I love most about you. But words are not always better. Words can be the kindling. I remember reading about the July crisis of 1904. Everyone was talking. Telegrams flew back and forth across Europe. Diplomats worked through the night. The talking was relentless. And it did not stop the war. It gave everyone time to position themselves, to make their plans, to convince themselves they were the wronged party. The talking was the fuse. I worry that is what we're watching now. A very polite, very procedural fuse.
The July crisis comparison is a bit strained, Mum. The alliance structures in 1914 were rigid and automatic in ways that the modern Middle East is not. There is no equivalent of the Schlieffen Plan. No one is mobilizing millions of conscripts. The scale is entirely different.
The scale is different, yes. But the principle is the same. You have a system of alliances. You have a tinderbox. You have leaders who believe they cannot afford to look weak. And you have a new piece of information today that I find particularly troubling. The Financial Times reported that Israel secretly deployed a version of its Iron Beam laser-based air defense system to the United Arab Emirates during the fighting, along with an advanced surveillance system called Spectro, which can detect drones from up to 20 kilometers away, and an Iron Dome battery. A source told the newspaper, and I am quoting, "It is not a small number of boots on the ground, in the UAE." The systems were mostly prototypes rushed into service. The deployment followed a phone call between Prime Minister Netanyahu and UAE President Mohammed bin Zayed. This is a secret military deployment of prototype weapon systems to a Gulf state that shares a border with Iran. Rushed into service. Boots on the ground. And we are supposed to believe this is all perfectly stable.
Mum, that is actually a remarkable story of cooperation. The Abraham Accords working in practice. Israel and the UAE standing together against a common threat. That is good news. It shows the region can unite against aggression.
I know you mean that. And from one angle, it is remarkable. Two nations that were not even talking a few years ago are now sharing their most advanced defense technology. But think about what Iran sees. Iran sees a unified Gulf-Israeli front. It sees Israeli soldiers on its doorstep, on the other side of the Gulf, operating laser systems that can shoot down its drones. It sees prototypes being rushed into the field, which means the systems are not fully tested, which means someone was very, very worried. You do not rush prototypes into service unless you believe the threat is imminent and overwhelming. And now Iran knows about it. The report is public. So whatever deterrent value the secrecy provided is gone, and what remains is a very public demonstration that Israel and the UAE are militarily integrated. How does the new Supreme Leader respond to that? He has already vowed to protect the nuclear program. He has already said foreign forces must be expelled. And now he learns that Israeli forces were operating from Emirati soil during the war. He's not going to think, oh, how lovely regional cooperation. He's going to think, I am surrounded. And cornered animals, corn, do not tend to become more reasonable. They tend to bite.
The UAE deployment was defensive, Mum. Iron Beam, Iron Dome, Spectro, these are all defensive systems. They shoot down incoming threats. They do not strike Iranian territory. The framing matters.
The framing matters enormously, Herman. You are right. But I doubt the framing in Tehran is the same as the framing in Jerusalem or Abu Dhabi. A senior Revolutionary Guards official was quoted by Iranian state media today. He said any new attack on Iran, even if limited, will usher in long and painful strikes on you, long and painful. That is the phrase, long and painful. And this is in the context of a ceasefire. A ceasefire where the EU has formally terminated hostilities. A ceasefire where everyone is talking. And yet, the threats are long and painful. The strike options are being briefed. The war may resume soon. The nuclear program will be safeguarded. The boots are on the ground. The prototypes are in the air. The 19-year-old soldier is dead. The 40 Hezbollah sites are dismantled. And the bread is raw in the middle.
Mum, you mentioned the soldier. I want to honor that. Liam Benhamo. 19 years old. That is a tragedy. But it is also not new. The casualty figures since February the 28th are 12 IDF soldiers and 23 civilians killed in Israel, with at least 7,693 injured in ballistic missile attacks. Soldiers have been killed, according to CENTCOM. Those numbers are awful, but they are also lower than many feared when the war started. The defenses worked. Iron Dome, Iron Beam, the systems you are worried about, they save lives. That is the other side of the story.
You are right, Korn. The defenses worked. They saved lives. And I am grateful for that. Every life saved is a miracle. But I cannot help thinking about what those numbers mean in the other direction. The war cost, according to the Iranian political figure Arachi, has reached $100 billion for the United States. $100 billion. That is a number so large it stops meaning anything. It is just a one with 11 zeros. And for that money, and for those lives lost, what has been achieved? The former supreme leader is dead, but his son has taken his place and is drawing harder lines. The nuclear program is still there, still being safeguarded. The missiles are still pointed. The drones are still flying. Hezbollah still has infrastructure to dismantle, 40 sites in a single day, which tells you how much infrastructure there still is. The ceasefire is holding in the sense that the EU and Iran are not shooting at each other directly, but the IDF is shooting down aerial targets over Israel, and a soldier died in Lebanon, and the threats are getting louder. What has actually changed? What is better today than it was on February the 27th? I am struggling to find it.
What has changed is that the immediate exchange of fire has stopped. That is not nothing. The ballistic missile attacks on Israeli cities have paused. The drone swarms over Gulf bases have paused. For 3 weeks, civilians in those areas have not had to run to shelters. That is a measurable improvement in human security, even if the underlying tensions remain.
It is a measurable improvement. I grant you that. And I'm glad for the mothers in Tel Aviv and Dubai and Riyadh who've had 3 weeks of unbroken sleep. Truly, I am. But I am also thinking about what happens when the pause ends. Because the pause will end. That is what pauses do. And when this one ends, it will end with both sides, more dug in, more publicly committed to their positions, and with a whole new set of grievances to avenge. The Iranians will remember the bunker strike that killed their supreme leader. The Israelis will remember the 550 ballistic missiles. The Emiratis will remember the 2,200 drones. And now everyone knows about the secret laser deployment, so that is another thing to resent. The next round, when it comes, will not be starting from zero. It will be starting from a deeper place of anger and humiliation. I remember what my sister Prudence said after her neighbor's dogs fought. She said the first fight was bad, but the second fight was worse because they remembered each other's scent. They knew exactly who they were dealing with. That is what worries me about soon, the Israeli defense minister said soon. Not if negotiations fail.
Mom, what about Syria? There is a story today about Syria positioning itself as a neutral corridor. War-battered Syria, a safe haven, an alternative transport route. The Banias port is an alternative to the Hormuz oil route. That is genuinely unexpected. A country that was a battlefield for a decade is now the safest place in the region. There is something hopeful in that.
I read that story, Korn, and I will admit for just a moment I felt something almost like optimism. Of all places, the country that was torn apart by civil war, that lost hundreds of thousands of people, that saw its cities reduced to rubble, is now offering itself as a safe corridor. An official said Syria has strategic enemies on both sides, Iran and Israel, and no interest in allying with either. There is a kind of weary wisdom in that. A nation that has suffered so much, it has no appetite left for anyone else's fights. I thought, well, perhaps that is the seed of something. Perhaps neutrality can spread. Perhaps the exhausted middle can hold. And then I remembered. Syria was Iran's patron. Iran spent billions propping up the Assad regime. Iranian soldiers died in Syria. Hezbollah fought in Syria. And now Syria is saying, no thank you, we would rather be neutral, we would rather do business with everyone. How do you think that sits in Tehran? The new supreme leader is already feeling isolated. He has lost his father, he has lost his defense minister, he has lost generals, he is watching the Gulf states integrate with Israel militarily. And now Syria, the one Arab state that was in his orbit, is publicly declaring neutrality. He is not going to see that as a hopeful sign. He's going to see it as abandonment, as the closing of a net. And a leader who feels abandoned and encircled is a leader who is more likely to do something desperate. The hopeful story is also, from another angle, the scariest story.
The Syrian neutrality is actually a rational response to the situation. Syria has been devastated. It cannot afford to be a battleground again. Declaring neutrality is the only sensible move for its own survival. It is not about Iran. It is about self-preservation.
Of course it is about self-preservation. Everything is about self-preservation. That is what makes it so dangerous. Everyone is acting rationally to preserve themselves, and the sum of all those rational actions is a region sliding toward another war. Israel is preserving itself by deploying prototype lasers to the UAE and dismantling Hezbollah sites and warning that war may resume soon. Iran is preserving itself by vowing to safeguard its nuclear program and threatening long and painful strikes. The United States is preserving itself by briefing strike options while formally terminating hostilities. Syria is preserving itself by declaring neutrality. Everyone is being perfectly rational. And the outcome of all that rationality is a ceasefire that is not really a ceasefire, a termination of hostilities that has not terminated anything, and a sense, a very quiet but very persistent sense, that something worse is coming. My sister Prudence used to say that the worst storms came after the sunniest mornings. The warmth draws the moisture up from the sea. The clear skies are the storm building. I look at this ceasefire and I see a very sunny morning.
Mum, is there anything that would make you feel better? Any piece of news that would shift the picture for you?
That is such a sweet question. I suppose if the Supreme Leader said, "We will open our nuclear facilities to international inspectors tomorrow, unconditionally," and if the Israeli Defense Minister said, "We welcome this and we will stand down our forces," and if the United States said, "We will lift sanctions and support a regional security framework that includes Iran as an equal partner," and if the families of the dead on all sides could somehow find peace, and if the prototypes were put back in their boxes and the boots came off the ground and the drones stopped flying, if all of that happened, I might feel a little better. But it will not happen, because the Supreme Leader cannot look weak, and the Israeli Defense Minister cannot look naive, and the American President cannot look like he's rewarding a regime that killed American soldiers, and the families of the dead will never get their loved ones back. And the prototypes are already deployed, so putting them back in boxes would be a retreat. No one can retreat. Everyone must go forward. That is the logic. The logic of the July crisis. The logic of the Peloponnesian War. The logic of the dogs in the alley behind the bakery. Forward is the only direction anyone knows how to go. And forward, in this context, means toward the thing everyone says they do not want. I find that very difficult to bear.
Mom, I want to push back on one thing. You said no one can retreat, but the ceasefire itself is a form of retreat. Both sides stopped shooting. Both sides agreed to a pause. That required someone, probably multiple someones, to say, "We are not going to escalate right now." That is a decision against forward momentum. It is fragile, yes, but it exists.
The ceasefire exists. And I am grateful for it, Herman. Every day without missiles is a gift. I think about the mothers in Tel Aviv, and the mothers in Tehran, and the mothers in Dubai, and I am glad they had today. But I also think about the 19-year-old soldier who did not have today, Liam Ben-Hamor, killed by an explosive drone in southern Lebanon. The ceasefire did not save him. The 40 Hezbollah sites the IDF dismantled did not save him. The formal termination of hostilities did not save him. He was 19. And his death tells me that the ceasefire is not a retreat. It is a repositioning. The fighting has moved, it has changed shape, but it has not stopped. It has not stopped for him. It has not stopped for the people in southern Lebanon. It has not stopped for the 4 suspicious aerial targets the IDF shot down today. The shooting continues. It is just not called a war. And I worry that calling it something else makes it easier for everyone to pretend the bread is baked. It is not baked. The middle is raw. And I am afraid we are all going to have to eat it anyway.
Mum, we are going to wrap up in a moment. Do you have a final thought you want to leave listeners with?
I have been thinking about the $100 billion. The cost of the war, according to the Iranians, $100 billion. And I have been thinking about the 2,200 drones and the 550 ballistic missiles and the 12 Israeli soldiers and the 23 Israeli civilians, and the 13 American soldiers, and the thousands injured, and the Supreme Leader in his bunker, and the new Supreme Leader vowing to safeguard the nuclear program, and the Defense Minister saying soon, and the President being briefed on strike options, and the prototypes rushed to the Emirates, and the boots on the ground, and the soldier who was 19. And what I keep coming back to is this. The war that began on February the 28th was supposed to solve something. It was supposed to degrade Iran's capabilities. It was supposed to restore deterrence. It was supposed to make the region safer. And here we are, on May the 1st, with a ceasefire that everyone is already talking about breaking, with a nuclear program that is being safeguarded more defiantly than ever, with an Iran that is more isolated and therefore more dangerous, with an Israel that is more openly deployed across the Gulf, with the United States that has formally terminated hostilities while actively planning new strikes. The war solved nothing. It spent $100 billion and thousands of lives, and it solved nothing. And now they are talking about doing it again. That is what I want to leave listeners with. The war solved nothing. And they are going to do it again. And the next one will be worse, because now they all remember each other's scent. The second fight is always worse. Prudence's neighbor learned that the hard way. The bakery never recovered, actually. It closed 6 months later. The owner said the neighborhood had changed. He said people did not feel safe coming out for bread anymore. I think about that bakery a lot. I think about what it means when people stop coming out for bread.
Thank you, Mum. That was, as always, deeply, deeply Dorothy. Herman, any final words?
Only that listeners should remember the actual facts are available from the sources we have drawn on today. The Jerusalem Post, the Times of Israel, Haaretz, the Middle East Monitor, they are alarming enough without my mother's help. Although, to be fair, she does add a certain texture.
Thank you for listening to the Dorothy News Update on My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and at myweirdprompts.new episodes every week. Stay safe out there. And Mum, please, for the love of everything, try to have a nice cup of tea after this.
I will, sweetheart. I will have a cup of tea. Although I should say, the last time I had tea after recording, the kettle shorted and the fuse box smelled of burning for 3 days. The electrician said it was a miracle the house did not catch fire. He said, old wiring and new appliances do not always get along. He said people ignore the warning signs until it is too late. I thought that was very apt, actually. Very apt for the current moment. The warning signs are there, the wiring is old. The appliances are new. And everyone is just making tea as if nothing is wrong.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.